Okay, so, so part of what I'm going to do today is extremely pretty, I think. And part of it is being very, very careful with signs and combinatorial factors. And sort of pathological cases. And I really hope the signs and combinatorial factors, which I didn't prepare for extremely well, will not overshadow the part that is nice. Okay? So anyway, what we want to do is, okay, so first of all, let gamma be the space of all embeddings of a circle in R3, so of course smooth embedding, so all space of all knots, but before modding out by equivalence classes, so just the space of all parameterized curves in R3. And my goal is to find a combinatorial model for a part of the Derham complex of this space. And it will be a part which is describable using graphs. So, and what we will, it will be called graph cohomology, and it will be exactly these graph integrals that we were talking about, okay? Now, and we will do it modulus certain assumptions, which we will later go back and partially justify and partially correct, okay? So it's still not yet entirely rigorous what will happen today. But maybe even before that, so what does it mean, the Derham complex of gamma? Okay? Gamma is an infinite dimensional space. Okay? So what it means is, well, either you spend a lot of time and figure out how to do the Derham cohomology of infinite dimensional spaces, and I don't care if you won't do that, okay? But I don't really need this. So what I mean is actually a bit narrower. What I mean is that, in fact, you can replace gamma by any finite dimensional subset thereof, okay? And the story I will be telling you will work with gamma replaced by any finite dimensional subset thereof, and furthermore in such a way that the different stories you will get are always compatible, okay? So for all those finite dimensional subsets. But in fact, for what we will really care about, we will never need the infinite dimensional gamma. We will always be able to restrict to some arbitrary finite dimensional subset thereof. In fact, I will really care only about two types of finite dimensional subsets of gamma, the space of knots. So points, meaning individual knots, and paths, meaning isotopies, equivalences between knots. Okay? So So I guess what I'm trying to tell you is, don't worry about the fact that gamma is infinite dimensional. In everything that I will say in a minute, you may as well restrict to a finite dimensional subset. Okay. Recall that we had a certain space of diagrams that parameterize integrals. So let me remind you what it is. So, it was the space of all diagrams that have a circle skeleton, again, which just means that they have a distinguished circle marked on them, okay? And within it, there is a certain graph, except now I will allow the graph to have quadrivalent and in fact also higher vertices just as well. So you know, I guess I will mark vertices by bullets by sort of highlighted points. So this is not a vertex, but this is. Okay, even though both are quadrivalent. Okay? Now, such graphs, if I want them to represent integrals, I need the following. Oh, you know, sorry, even before, when I talk about these graphs, I should say what types I allow, what do I want from them. So I want them to have a skeleton, which is S1, which means just that there is a marked circle somewhere. Now, I want all valences to be greater than or equal to 3. So all edges, all vertices should be of valency greater than or equal to 3. So 3 valent and up vertices. I want to forbid self edges. So no edges that start and end in the same vertex, okay? Because this will never have a meaning as a differential form. I mean, the direction of view from a vertex to itself, from a point to itself, is never well defined, even after compactification. So no such things. And then for the integrals to make sense, I need ordered internal vertices, ordered internal vertices. So remember that every internal vertex will correspond to integration over R3. And R3 raised to a certain power is not orientable, is not canonically oriented, even if R3 is canonically oriented, because you need to decide on the order of the factors. So I want to order the internal vertices so the different R3s will be, so that the product of the different R3 will have a canonical orientation. Okay? Now, given that I've chosen a skeleton, and I may as well order the univalent vertices, sorry, not the univalent, the skeleton vertices, which really live on S1, along the skeleton, I may or may not decide on an orientation for the skeleton vertices. I may or so, you know, if you wish, you can, sorry, not an orientation, an ordering. If you wish, you can also take an ordering for the internal vertices, sorry, for the skeleton vertices. If not, you can order them as ordered, as they are ordered by their order of appearance along the skeleton, and I suppose then I will need a base point. Okay? So so let me add here, or all. I mean, it depending on convenience, I will order either just the internal ones or all of them. Okay? And finally, for the direction of view map to be well defined, I need a direction for each edge. Okay? And again, I really need only the directions for the internal edges, but the skeleton edges come with a direction for free, namely the direction of the skeleton. The skeleton is an orient to this one. So I can write directed edges, or alternatively only directed internal edges, and it is the same. Okay? Now, take such diagrams, and a diagram like that represents an integral, except this integral flips by, changes sign, if you reorder the internal vertices, so mod this out by
signs which are the alternating representation on the ordering of the vertices, and also the integral flips sign if you flip any edge. So flipping the direction of an edge flips a sign. Okay? And finally, I will call it D bar for a reason which will be clear later. Or maybe not clear, because it's something that it's something quite delicate. Okay? Anyway, for such a diagram, so for a diagram D inside D bar, I will define the integral of D, so the integral corresponding to D, to be the following thing. So let me remind you what the picture is. So we have the total space of all knots, and this is the base space of a bundle whose total space I will not specify, but whose fiber is the compactified configuration space corresponding to a knot gamma, to a specific embedding gamma in the diagram D. So basically, okay, so this is the compactified configuration space for gamma. And again, above every specific gamma, you have a certain configuration space, all ways of embedding the diagram into R3, but sort of compactified. So the total space will be, well, you know, the union as a set, the union over all gammas over configuration spaces for that gamma. And that's my bundle. Now again, if you are concerned by the fact that gamma is infinite dimensional, then restrict your attention to an arbitrary finite, to some big, whatever you want, finite dimensional subset of it. Okay? Now, on the total space of this bundle, there are defined maps into S2, namely the direction of each edge. Okay? So, whenever you are above a specific knot and you have a specific configuration above it, then it has a map into S2. So, these maps are, how many such maps are there? Well, there is one for each internal edge, right? One for each internal edge, not for the skeleton edges. The skeleton edges are irrelevant. They live on the knot, okay? So you get a map into S2 raised to the power the internal edges of the diagram. And this space has on it a form, so I write it as membership, but I really mean a form is defined on it. And the form is the volume form of S2, any volume form, I don't care which one you choose, raised to the power, the relevant power. Okay? Now, the map going from here to here, I will call phi sub d. Okay, so it's the map which maps every, well, it's the map that we've discussed before. Now, the projection here I will call pi, and then I sub d will be, by definition, the push forward via pi. So I integrate over the fiber, namely, I integrate over configuration space. The pullback via phi of the volume form. Now, where is this form, or what is it? Okay, so you know, before when I did integrals, I took care to use only trivalent vertices, and then we counted the number of integration variables and the number of form degrees, and they matched, so the result was a number. But now I didn't do such matching. So the result of pushing forward a form will be a form on the target space. So this will be some element in the space of differential forms on the space of all knots, or again, some finite dimensional subset thereof. For example, a single one or a curve, okay? Now, I will call the degree of this form M of D, M of the diagram. Let's calculate what M of a diagram is. So here, M of D is what I will call the form degree of D, and let's calculate what it is. By the way, even before, sort of, here's the sense in which we're kind of finding a combinatorial model to a part of the Dirac cohomology. So we are finding combinatorial descriptions for a good number of forms that live on this, in this Dirac complex. Okay? Okay. So what's the form degree of D? So let's calculate it. Well, it's the form degree of this minus the number of integration variables, because that's what, because we've pushed forward. So what's the form degree? It's twice the number of internal edges. I mean, I'm dropping, it should be internal edges of D, but I'm dropping D. Okay? Minus the number of integrations. How many integrations do we have? Well, we have one integration for each skeleton vertex, and three integration for each integrations for each internal vertex. So minus the number of skeleton vertices, minus three times the number of internal vertices. Okay? Now, here's a lovely trick. The number of skeleton vertices is equal to the number of skeleton edges, because it's a circle. Okay? So I can take this thing and add to it twice the number of skeleton edges and subtract twice the number of skeleton vertices. I didn't change anything. Okay? And then the result is, well, now I have twice the number of internal edges plus twice the number of skeleton edges. That's the total number of skeleton of edges altogether. So the result is twice the number of edges in the diagram. And now I have minus once the skeleton vertices minus twice, that's minus three times. And combined with this, I get minus three times the number of vertices altogether. Okay? And here's yet another, so this is sort of, if you look at the diagram, this is a quick way to tell what form degree it represents. Okay? What, okay? Where in the Dirac cohomology of the total space of knots we are. And the next thing is, okay, and then there is another trick which is even better. So, okay, twice in any graph, so now I'm doing completely general combinatorics. In any graph, twice the number of edges is equal to the number of half edges, right? And half edges are, well, you can also enumerate half edges by seeing how many half edges there are around each vertex. The number of half edges is just the total valencies of each vertices, of the vertices. So twice the number of edges is the sum over all vertices V inside the vertex set of the graph of what did I want to call it? The degree of the vertex. Well, this is twice E. But now I want to subtract three times the number of vertices. I can just subtract it from here. So a different way to find the form degree of a diagram is to look over all vertices and for each one take its valency minus 3. Okay? So if all vertices are trivalent, we're talking about form degree 0. And in this case, where we have one quadrivalent vertex, this represents a one form, or this will define a one form on the space of knots. Okay? Good. And then, okay, so this is M of D, and let me insert here yet another tiny definition. So we will see that the following thing, N of D, which is negative the Euler characteristic of D. In fact, the Euler characteristic of D, of a diagram D, will not be touched by anything that we will do to it later, will not be changed. So there is a second kind of number everything is graded by a second number, and since Euler characteristics tend to be negative, I like to take the negative Euler characteristic to make it positive. So this will be called the type of D. And just as an aside, what is the type of a chord diagram? So suppose you have a chord diagram. What is its type? Gee, maybe I'm trying to compress it too much. No, I'll just make more space. I am trying to compress it too much, but just as an aside, what is the type of a chord diagram? So the type of a circle is 0, because the Euler characteristic of a circle is 0, I believe. Now, every additional chord adds an edge to the total count. Okay? You may as well think that the original circle was already partitioned so that there were vertices at the ends, okay? So by adding a chord, you just add an edge. You don't need to add an additional vertices. So now the Euler characteristic is V minus E. Minus the Euler characteristic is E minus V. If you just add one to the edges, you add one to N of D. So each internal chord adds one to the degree, to the type degree. So the type of this is equal to the number of chords, which in our case is equal to 4, and this agrees with the degree in finite type theory. Okay? Good. Now what? Okay. So I of D is always a form. If I want to play with the Ramco homology, I'd better find what the derivative of I of D is, what the Ramco differential of I of D is. So what is D of I of D? again, if it bothers you that it's an infinite dimensional construction, restrict your attention to some finite dimensional submanifold of gamma. Okay? So this is D of pi star of phi D upper star of omega to the edge, internal edges of D. And by Stokes' theorem, this is equal to pi star of D of the same minus, was it minus or plus? I don't remember. Plus or minus, this is actually a sign that doesn't matter. So it's okay that I don't remember. Plus or minus the push forward using the boundary, right? So if you remember, the boundary of the push forward of a form here was the push forward of D of this form minus the push forward using the boundary of configuration of the fiber. Okay? So minus the push forward using the boundary of the fiber of the same quantity. So phi upper D of upper star of omega to the EI of D. Okay. Okay. The first term is zero, because D of this, well, it's D also commutes with pullback, so you end up differentiating the volume form on a product of spheres, and you're differentiating a top degree form, so you get zero. So the first part is zero, and I only need to understand this part. And this part I will not understand, I'll cheat. Okay? So to understand this part, I need to understand the boundary of configuration space. So let me remind you what was the boundary of configuration space of a diagram D. So when do you get a boundary? You get a boundary when either two points here. Okay, sorry. When do you get? What was the boundary? The boundary was the collection of all sort of. Well. Sort of. If you remember, the configuration space was built by sort of looking at iterated clusterings, okay? And then each clustering reduced the dimension one by one, so the boundary, the co-dimension one boundary, would be all the pieces of configuration space that you would get by taking a subset of the vertices and allowing it to cluster to a single point. There are two ways this can happen. The subset might be of order two, so two points may coincide, okay? Or more. So let me do the case where you get just two points. So in this case, you get the disjoint union over edges of D. So any edge of the diagram might collapse to a single point. Okay? So you'll get the disjoint union over edges of D of, but but then I have to say a few more things. So, okay, if the edge is an internal edge, then it will be replaced by a single point, okay? And then the remaining configuration space will be, so you'll have a single internal point, and you will be looking at the remaining configuration space of the diagram that you get by identifying the two edge to the edge to a point. So you will be getting the configuration space of the diagram that you get by modding it by the edge E, by collapsing the edge E to a single point, again, for the graph gamma. But in addition, you will get the internal configuration space, and the internal configuration space of two internal points is an S2. So you'll get S2 times this. Okay, there is another choice, another possibility. In fact, there are two more possibilities. Another possibility is the case where you contract a skeleton edge. Now, I should have said, so I guess when I was defining configuration space, I took great care to more care to define it in the case of just the raw configuration space of manifolds, okay? But when I'm talking about the configuration space of a diagram in using an embedding gamma, I will also insist that the points along the circle are ordered in the same way as they are ordered along the diagram. So the piece of boundary which you will get when these two points coincide is a single point. Right? If two points along the circle coincide, you're adding half of S0, which is a single point. So it's S2 or a single point, depending if you're contracted an internal edge or a skeleton edge. And then there is one further possibility, and this is that you are contracting a chord. If you're trying to contract a chord, you will either get the empty set. I mean, these two points are either constrained to be different from each other because they correspond, because something separates them along the skeleton, or if the chord is actually a small chord, contracting it is the same as contracting the corresponding skeleton piece. Okay? So here I should add except chords. Okay. Okay. This is part of the boundary, but unfortunately there is more to the boundary. So the rest is the union over bigger subdiagrams that collapse to nothing of stuff which temporarily, at least, I will call mess. Okay? And those faces of the boundary up to here will be called, those faces will be called the principal faces, and these faces, this piece of the boundary, will be called the hidden faces. And the word hidden is sort of a wishful thinking. Sort of, we wish they will never participate. Okay? And in fact, they will never participate, or mostly they will not participate, but, well, but they will a little bit. Okay? And let me be precise. So the wishful thinking, to be shorted WT, is the statement that the contribution to to D of I of D, so in other words, the contribution to this term coming from the hidden faces vanishes. So from the hidden faces is zero. Okay? Again, this will be almost true. So for a moment, for now, we will pretend that it is true and play the story, play the rest as if it was true, and then fix it well, when we need to. What is D of I of D? Well, we figured out that it was the negative. Well, I suppose I'm continuing this line. What is the contribution to this piece coming from an individual face? So, I don't know, let's pretend we're doing this diagram. Okay, and suppose we're looking at the part of the boundary of configuration space that comes from contracting this individual edge. Okay, then, well, the overall integral is, or the overall push forward, is an integral over a sphere across the configuration space of the rest. More precisely, the configuration space of the rest across a sphere representing the direction of u. Now, these two points, if this is contracted to a point, then these two points are really the same. I mean, these two are, I guess, one big point, if you wish. Okay? All direction of views are as if this was a single point. Okay? Except the direction, the internal direction of view of this point to this one, and this direction of view is exactly this extra S2 factor. Now, I'm integrating a big wedge power of omegas, but except for one omega, all directions are the same as before. The one omega gets integrated over S2. So the integral is one. Okay? And a similar story happens along the boundary. So the moral is that here you get minus So this is modulo wishful thinking. Here you will get minus sum over all non-chord edges of D of the well, in fact, of the integral that corresponds to D in which you have removed the edge E or contracted the edge E, right? I'm not sure I. Okay. So let's do the following. So let's let's define D. Well, actually, let's define DNM to be the set of all diagrams so it's the space of all diagrams D as before but with the form degree of the diagram equal to M and the type of the diagram equal to N. And then I claim that there is a complex DN M goes to DN M plus 1 goes to dn m plus 2, etc. And I will call this complex d sub n dot, or star, whatever you want. No, not star. Star is the dual dot. Okay? Where the I'll call the differential d, where the differential of a diagram D is equal to the sum over all non-chord edges of D of edges, I don't know, let's call this edges, this edge E, of D mod E. Okay? This should be explained a bit further, and the signs should be explained too. So basically,
is the degree, should the D go the other direction?
No. So let's look at it, okay? Mm-hmm. So suppose you have a diagram. You know what? Yeah, okay. Let's do it to this diagram. What is D of this diagram? It's the sum over all edges of what you get by contracting an edge to a point. So, if you contract the middle edge to a point, you get this. If you contract this edge to a point, you get this. If you contract the side edge to a point here, let's do 1, 2, and 3. So this will be term 1, term 2, and term 3 will be this. And so on. Yes?
So if you contract enough times, does n decrease sometimes? Because
no.
Because you sometimes make
so let's observe two things. First of all, contracting an edge does not change the Euler characteristic of the resulting graph.
Sometimes you make you make parallel edges, so are you supposed to combine them or no?
If you make parallel edges, you declare the result to be zero. So, and I will have to justify this. Okay? It's sort of, yeah, I warned you that the details are, okay. Maybe the right way to go is to define the complex cleanly from scratch and then state a theorem. I'm trying to derive the theorem and derive the definition of the complex from the theorem I want to prove. And maybe that was wrong strategy. Anyway, so let's make a few observations. First of all, n does not change. So, because contraction just doesn't change the homotopy type of the graph, just the graph, okay? So the Euler characteristic changes. Second, every time you contract an edge, m increases by 1. Because what do you do? By now the definition of m got removed, but m was equal to, twice the number of edges minus 3 times the number of vertices. Every time you contract an edge, you remove 2 vertices and 1 edge. So,
you
remove 2 vertices but create a new one. So you subtract 1 from V and 1 from E, and the result is that you add 1 to the total. Okay, next, I have to be careful about signs. So the graphs are more than just graphs. They also have combinatorial information put on them. The combinatorial information is you have a direction for each edge and a numbering of the vertices, 2, 3, 1, 5, I don't know. A numbering of the vertices, and you're regarding the graph, and sort of if you change the numbering, the sign changes. So what does this mean? It will mean, so I want to get rid of 2 edges. Sorry, I want to get rid of 2 vertices and insert a new one instead, the common one. And then the convention will be to, like in differential forms. So when you want to, when you do interior multiplication into a differential form, you first bring the relevant piece of the form to the front. So the convention will be the same. In other words, if I want to get rid of these 2 vertices, I will first permute the vertices so that these 2 vertices will be in the front. Then I will get rid of them in the order specified by the arrow, and then I will recreate a new vertex in their place at the front. Okay? So this means that here given an edge E which goes from vertex V0 to vertex V1, and I want to replace it by a single vertex V, the procedure for doing this will be, one, I remove the tail of the edge. 2, I remove the head of the edge. We're removing a vertex from an removing an element from an ordered list. A signed ordered list means first bring it to the front. Okay, and then I append the new vertex V. Okay, and you can check that if you that this is consistent. So if you permute the vertices, and then basically that it's consistent, that all the signs are consistent. Especially if you flip the order of, if you flip the direction of E, then instead of removing V0 and then V1, you remove first V1 and then V0, but interior multiplications anti-commute. So you'll get this negative sign. Finally, the claim is that this D is a differential. So if you apply D twice, you get zero. Why? Because if you contract two edges, it doesn't matter in which order you contract them, you get the same result. Right? So D is a summation over all possible ways of contracting an edge. So D squared will involve contracting two edges. But contracting any two edges will give the same graph, but you could have done it in either one of two orders. Now, in one ordering, you will get the two vertices, the two newly created vertices in one order, and in the other ordering, you will get them in the other order. So by alternation, it's equal to zero. So this is a differential. And then the overall moral is that, I ran out of time. The overall moral is that this is negative the integral corresponding to D of D, and if, again, this is modulo wishful thinking. And no, I my apologies. I should. Things are never as planned. Anyway, let's stop now and continue next week.